everybody.
Hey, guys.
Woo. Welcome to Magic the Amateuring, episode 8.
Magic the Amateuring is when we talk about magic on a podcast, and you're listening to it, so you're doing it right.
You're doing it right, you guys. Good job.
We talk about all kinds of stuff for new magic players or people haven't played in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you've played forever, but you have always sucked. And now that's
and you've come to admit it.
And now that's something you want to work on.
First step, admitting it.
Yeah, second step.
Listen to this.
Yep.
Third step.
Go back and listen to the old episode.
Right.
We have 8 now.
Wow.
8.
Oh, that's what the 8 signifies?
Yeah, the 8.
Oh, I was wondering.
After episode?
I thought it was just a code name for the episode.
Oh, you thought it was infinity flipped on its side. I understand.
Yeah.
I have a problem with math.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. I'm Maria.
I'm Ben.
And we are joined with guest host, once again, guest host Nels.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Nels.
How's it going?
This is Nels' return.
Yeah. This is like, it's like Nels' return.
2.0.
Nice. You can see why we brought it back.
Nels, we're so happy. Nels' backstory is that he used to play Magic back in the day. What year did you start playing, Nels?
Roughly 1994. It was the beginning of school year, my sophomore year in high school, so it would have been 94. No, the end of my sophomore year, so 94.
Did you graduate high school?
In 94.
Okay.
As a sophomore.
Cool.
And so what we're trying to do is get you back into it again.
I would like that.
Are we succeeding?
I don't know. Are we playing Magic right now?
We're talking about Magic now. Right.
I don't know. Maybe the rules have changed so much that I don't know what Magic looks like anymore.
From now, yeah. There's a rule that says you're always playing Magic. No matter what.
Oh, so. That card is sweet.
I wouldn't doubt it with all the weird shit going on now.
Well, thanks for listening, you guys. If you want to contact us, you can send us an email at magictheamateuring@gmail.com. You can check out our website at magictheamateuring.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. We have doubled our Twitter followers since last episode. So thanks, everybody. We're at MTAcast. Yeah. And we've got a lot of cool stuff coming up in this episode. Nels is going to crack 2 the dark packs for us.
Mm-hmm. What? Nostalgia.
Nostalgia yes. Moment.
And hopefully we'll see.
We're going to pull some sweet rares.
Yeah.
I hope so.
I remember I looked up, like I said, after the last podcast, I looked up the dark and there is indeed only one card that's worth anything.
I love it.
What are our chances?
Well, 1 in 8. I don't know. How does that work? There's only 8 cards in these packs.
Oh, they're so small.
Yeah.
Dear listener, this pack is about as thin as an old school stick of gum, not Orbitz, Juicy Fruit.
I looked at it and it was like, it reminded me of the thickness of a very like thin dinner mint.
Like an Andes mint is thicker than an Andes.
It's sub Andes mint.
One thickness. Layer of an Andes mint.
Right? I also want to.
Like, yeah. Right, that's how I eat them.
How do you eat your Andes mint?
Email us at.
I dunk it in milk.
Oh my God.
Do you?
No.
Yeah, you do. You do. I know you do.
We also want to say thank you, especially to some of our Twitter followers who have responded to our shout outs. And a couple weeks ago, we made a card, Sleepy Goblin.
Mm.
We invented it. Based on Megan, who is currently traveling Europe eating, she's going on a pancake boat.
What?
Yes.
Is it made of pancakes?
What is that?
It is a boat.
Is it like a lily pad, but instead of plant matter, it's just pancake?
It's a boat where you can eat unlimited pancakes.
What if you get tired of pancakes, which happens every time you eat pancakes?
I know, right? You need to have the salt. Yeah, I don't know. I guess you just keep going.
Then you gotta. Yep. Then the bacon boat comes by, and you gotta get on that.
Does it, like, is it in water?
Yes.
Or is it just in like a sea of syrup?
We all can wish.
What country is this? Do we know?
She's in Amsterdam.
Oh. Oh, so she's just high. It's not
she's
actually.
She's like
about,
you guys.
There's a pancake boat.
I'm on a pancake boat.
Whatever, Megan.
It's just her. It's just like the bathtub of their equivalent of a Perkins.
I'm on a pancake boat. It smells so good.
I'm getting on a donut airplane next week. It's gonna be so cool.
We miss you, Megan.
Come back, Megan.
Bring us a
pancake. But not on a Not on any food-based vehicle.
Unless it's a waffle train. Unless... Oh, God. Anyway, one of our Twitter followers designed us a Sleepy Goblin card, and we had asked you if there was any way you could make Sleepy Goblin useful.
Just to refresh, here's how Sleepy Goblin works. Now, would you like to do the honors?
Sure. I like reading text. Sleepy Goblin, one red, creature, goblin. Sleepy Goblin enters the battlefield tapped and doesn't untap during your untap step. Whenever Sleepy Goblin is dealt damage, untap it. It is a 1/1 creature.
So, it's pretty bad.
Really bad.
So in what situation? He would have to be enchanted to have more life than he does in order to...
indestructibility.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't do a whole lot just on his own. And that's... I mean, we did that on purpose.
Right.
It's supposed to be bad.
It's supposed to be a crap card.
Yeah. But we issued a challenge out to the true fans to see if they could make this card work.
And somebody did.
Someone did it.
There should be a rule. There's a way to play where you have to have one card in your deck that's a huge liability.
Yeah. It's like one of those movies with like the sidekick. Like you just know he's going to get someone else killed. Okay. Shout out to Andrew Wilson at Silent77. That's going to be really hard.
First the number, but then the word.
First the number, then the word. You did this to yourself, man. But yeah, at Silent, number 7, word 7.
Right.
Okay, so Andrew came up with this combo, and it goes a little something like this. You've got Sleepy Goblin. You know, he's just sitting there untapped. What does he do? And then... you put an enchantment on him called Indestructibility, so now he's indestructible. So that's good, because now we can do damage to him.
He can take all the damage in the world.
Wow. And he won't die. He'll just untap. So then on top of that, you give him Fire Whip, which is another enchantment that says enchanted creature has, this creature deals 1 damage to target creature or player. And then you can also sacrifice it to deal damage. So now...
Wait, how does it deal the damage?
It has to tap.
Oh, you just tap.
Yeah, the creature has to tap. So now Sleepy Goblin can untap itself a bunch of times, assuming you have a way to get it untapped first.
Right. I'm like, first it's got to take that damage.
Yeah. But that doesn't actually do anything. That just allows your Sleepy Goblin to untap a lot.
It just brings him up to a normal 1/1 creature.
Can you win a game with this deck, with the Sleepy Goblin deck right there?
This deck will never win any game.
If that was the whole theme was Sleepy Goblin.
Right.
But then if you want to do more cool stuff, you can always put stuff on it like Druid's Call or Insolence or other stuff. So special award to Andrew
for
figuring out how to make this card amazing. It's too good now.
He also designed a
He made us a card.
Cool design.
Yeah, he put a little picture on there. I'm just gonna assume that Andrew drew that himself.
As am I.
Oh wait, but does it say the artist? You can see it on there.
It does have an artist name under here, but I cannot make it out.
It looks like Megan.
It looks like Michelle Dulange.
Tell me that doesn't look like Megan.
It does look like Megan.
It looks exactly like Megan. The picture, I don't know. Yeah. He must have cameras in Megan's house.
It's a painting of a goblin on a pancake boat.
Lessons learned. Well, Gate Crash has been out for a little while now, and as everyone knows, we love Limited here, and so we're going to talk about some basic guild pointers from Gate Crash, stuff we've come across in playing a couple of drafts, and just our initial thoughts on the guilds and maybe some tips, some amazeballs tips for learners. All right, Ben, so let's talk about Simic first.
Yeah.
What are your basic thoughts on Simic so far that you've seen?
Well, it has blue, and it has green.
We're going to go a little
less,
past that.
Less basic?
Less basic.
So Simic, it seems like it's a pretty aggressive deck, actually. And I think if you make a deck that has just like a bunch of like 1-drops, 2-drops, 3-drops, and maybe like a few 4-drops, it could be pretty good. I've seen a couple people draft decks online that had multiple copies of the Guild Mage, and the Guild Mage can put +1/+1 counters on things as they come into play. And so that works pretty sweet with like any 2-drop, because once you get to 4 mana, you can just put an additional token on it, and it's going to help then evolve all your guys even further. So I think the key to Simic, it seems like, is just making a really aggressive deck, getting a lot of creatures that evolve. Krakenur is really good.
Yeah.
Frilled Oculus is really good, the 1/3 that pumps.
Yes.
And both of the 1-drops, the Cloudfin Raptor and Experiment 1, the Human Ooze.
I played a Simic deck at a draft, and I splashed red for just a couple of cards. But that Frilled Oculus on turn 2 is pretty good.
That's an awesome name, too.
And it has one eye.
Can I see it?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of like an eye with like a lingerie on.
Yeah. No, you're thinking of Lacey Oculus.
That's a different one now.
I went to high school with Lacey Oculus.
Well, there's a sexy homunculus if I've ever seen one.
There she is.
Oh, damn. That's not what I thought of.
Nels' boner just hit the table.
Yeah.
Nels got a little whiplash.
Man, my podcast boner just went away.
So that guy is really good.
He is pink. I mean.
That's purple. That's purple, Ben.
Still, no boner. Sorry.
Nels, what is it going to take for a Magic card to give you a boner? God, what do we have to do?
Okay. I'm sorry.
And those 1-drops, I had Experiment 1, and I don't think I had Cloudfin Raptor. Anyway.
Just to catch the listeners up, what do you mean by 1-drop?
In
case somebody out there doesn't know what that is.
Well, a 1-drop is basically any card that you can play in turn 1.
I gotcha.
So
1 mana.
Yeah, anything that costs 1 mana. And then usually you're talking about creatures. But, because usually, if you have a Lightning Bolt or something, even though it costs 1 mana,
right,
you're usually not dropping that shit on turn 1. You gotta save that shit.
Yeah.
And recently I was watching some footage of the Grand Prix in London. Yeah. Streamed from my iPad to my HDTV, you guys.
Oh, she's in deep, you guys.
It was pretty good.
The future.
Anyway, and a Simic deck actually won the tournament. And I was looking at the deck, and it occurred to me that there wasn't anything particularly, like, insane about this deck. Just by looking at it, it wasn't like, oh, he has all the mythic rares or whatever. I think it was just the way that it was put together and obviously the way that it was played. And it included 3 1-drops. Yeah. 1 Cloudfin Raptor and 2 Experiment 1s. And 2 Frilled Oculuses.
Typically those 1-drops are only really good if you can play them, like, on the first turn.
Right.
I think they're pretty important. And a deck like this can put other decks in a lot of trouble before they have a chance to get all their good cards out. This is probably not going to be more aggressive than a Boros deck, but it'll probably be more aggressive than anything else.
And if there is a lot of talk that you have to draw correctly in Simic. If you draw your 1-drop on, turn 5 or whatever, what good does it do you? But if you have it on turn 1,
if you have a bunch of evolved creatures in your deck and you don't have them in your opening hand, uh-oh.
Mold
that
shit.
How many of these decks that play in Grand Prix are like, uh-oh, if you don't get it going in the correct way right away, then you just are SOL.
Well, so this was a limited Grand Prix, and so they were making all limited decks, and then it's really a question of who you're up against. I think the way these things work now is on day one, they have everyone makes a sealed deck, so you'll get 6 boosters. And build a 40-card deck out of that. And then everyone just plays that with each other. And then the people that advance to day 2, then on day 2, they start doing drafts. So instead of just being up against everyone, you're up against a pod of you and 7 other people. And then it's just a question of, can you beat these people or can you do well against these people? And then the top 8, so the person that won, this was just their deck for the top 8 that they drafted.
Gotcha. All right.
So it's almost a question more like this deck we're looking at, you know, how well was it matched up against other decks? And in that sealed pod, you know, what was the quality of cards, or in that draft pod, what was the quality of cards? Were they all really good? Or, you know, maybe they're all really bad? Or maybe there were good cards, but they were all really expensive, and so this deck that looks a lot faster was able to, you know, come over top and get the job done.
So what's the balance, do you think, in things like this, where people are playing a good deck versus a good contextual deck? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
This one will do well against what I'm up against.
Well, a lot of times, it kind of depends on what cards you get. If you get a bunch of sweet rares, then you might have a really powerful deck,
right,
that doesn't rely on a lot of synergy, or doesn't rely on what else is out there. But if, you know, that obviously doesn't happen all the time. And if that doesn't happen for you, I think a lot of people fall back on their plan of making a deck that has really good synergy, or a deck that's really consistent, and that they understand really well.
Yeah, and something that stood out to me, besides this being, you know, looking fairly mundane, was the fact that it had 3-1 drops. And if I was drafting, I don't think I would have taken 3-1 drops. But now that I've seen it work and seen how that can be a benefit, because your chances of having one in your hand in your 7-card draw are so much better if you have 3, that it really sets you up better to have that 2, you know, that Frilled Oculus or whatever, Disciple of the Old Ways on turn 2, and immediately you're building. Why are you laughing?
I just, and now when I hear Frilled Oculus, I hear Grilled Octopus.
Sorry. Nels, have you ever had Grilled Octopus?
I don't know.
I ate a baby octopus once.
Did you really? Was it grilled?
I don't know. No, it was probably raw.
I remember, I don't remember there being like grill marks on it.
Whoa, Shamble Shark.
May have been broiled. Yeah, Shamble
What's
Shark.
What's a Shamble Shark?
You have one of those in your deck, Maria?
No.
It's a crab.
Fish crab.
Does it know Rebel Hulk? And are they on a TV show together?
Shamble Shark and Rebel Hulk.
Actually, it sounds like a hipster folk band.
Shamble Shark and Rebel Hulk. I'm going to make their poster.
Like a guitar and a banjo.
Yeah. I think we are that hipster band now.
Yeah, we are.
You probably haven't heard of us.
If you have, we're just going to, we quit.
Yeah, we're done.
We quit.
It's like a quantum.
We're getting a little too mainstream now.
It's a quantum band.
Now that you know about this, listener.
Once you observe us, we disappear.
So Orzhov, Ben, you've been playing a lot of Orzhov.
I have. I've drafted 3 Orzhov decks, and I played Orzhov in a pre-release.
And what do you think is the key to playing a good Orzhov deck?
The key is stay home and leave the Orzhov cards to me. I think all 3 of the times I drafted, I've been like the only person drafting Orzhov. So step 1.
Sure.
Be the only person drafting Orzhov.
Are they not into that, or like they don't? No, are they confident with it.
I don't think it's particularly. It might just be the store that I'm drafting at. No one wants to do it. I think it's just been good fortune.
Look, it's not as flashy as your Gruul or your Boros. Right.
Yeah.
Well, is there one that's like more popular than all the others?
Well, there's one that's less popular than all the
yes,
others.
Yes.
No one likes Dimir.
No. Mm-hmm.
And Dimir is blue black. Although, I mean, people at the stores that I've been playing at have been drafting Dimir. But yeah, everyone's talking about how that one is terrible.
Really?
But a lot of people were talking at the tournament in London about how it had gotten a bad rap. And perhaps that was just because of the pre-release. People were able to make really strong decks in the other guilds. Mm. But when you draft, you can really draft a really strong Dimir deck. Yeah.
You have to know what you're doing. It's like operating a crane.
Oh, I get it now. Yes, I get it.
Don't do it unless you know how to do that.
I feel that's like
you could knock over the library.
Nels, didn't you grow up on a crane?
I did. It was a crane in the middle of a lake.
It was a pancake crane.
I feel like that's like a hallmark of like other games like this, and maybe like video games too, where there's like one thing that people are like, I think this sucks, and nobody does it. But
like all fact, slaps in 007.
Right, but in fact, the slap is really powerful.
Yes.
You know what I mean, though? Like, then people figure it
like,
out.
Or like in StarCraft, where it's like, oh, nobody builds fire bats.
Until they figure out how to use fire bats.
And yeah, then, exactly. Then they're amazing.
Then you're screwed, yeah.
But I think the real reason no one feels fire bats is because they took them out of the game.
That's true.
In StarCraft 2, so...
Now they're battle hellions.
Yeah, they're hellions.
Swarm. You guys want to talk about StarCraft 2 instead?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. So if you're you know, drafting Orzhov, the decks I've had that I've had some success with have had a lot of removal in them, like
a
serious
ton,
amount
a
of
ton.
Removal, like 8 to 10 removal spells, and that's kind of like where I started. So I was like, oh, I'm getting a lot of removal spells. I'm going to continue taking them. And then they just kind of had, like, shitty creatures. Like, here's my 2/2, and then I just kill every other creature you play, and yep. I keep attacking with my 2/2. So if you can do that, that works well. If you're up against a deck with a lot of creatures, you might have problems doing that. But I've had decent success against Boros if I can just survive long enough, which means if you have a hand that doesn't look good, you got to mulligan that. And then also against Gruul, I haven't had a lot of success. I've gotten beaten several times by good Gruul decks when I'm in Orzhov. And I don't know if that's just a weakness of my decks, or if maybe Orzhov is just no good against Gruul.
So what makes Gruul good, other than the right seasoning?
Is it just good against your Orzhov strategy?
Yeah, it might be. I think Gruul has just way bigger creatures than everyone else, and Orzhov kind of has smaller creatures than everyone else. So that matchup is hard for that reason. But if you've got, there's some Orzhov cards like Smite, which I think is really good against Gruul. It just lets you destroy a blocked creature. So you can wait until they go to Blood Rush on one of their creatures, and then you're just like, bam, oh, smited, 2 for 1. Eat
it. Is this your Orzhov
deck? Yeah, that's my Orzhov deck.
I'm looking at it, listeners.
So that's my advice for Orzhov, but you know, it's still pretty early, so
yeah.
Don't take my word as the gospel.
Don't take my word for it. Dun dun dun. So against those good Gruul decks that you played, what was their strategy that you think helped them?
Well, they played out a lot of creatures.
Right.
And then they attacked with their creatures.
Right. Easy as that?
Yeah. And I had a lot of, I think the key to victory in the Gruul deck is don't overextend. Be careful not to Blood Rush if your opponent might have instant speed removal, because then they're going to be able to 2 for 1 you. And if they do that, they're going to be able to grind you out over the long game. But if you just keep playing creatures and keep attacking, then eventually they're going to run out of removal and then you're going to be in trouble.
I really want to play Gruul. I haven't yet.
You guys, a Thrall.
Oh my God. Thralls are back.
Is it the first time they've been back since Fallen Empires?
Maybe.
Wow.
They must have been in the original Ravnica set, too.
Wow. Oh, another Thrall.
Nels is so excited.
The Thralls.
Fallen Empires was my jam.
Just wait till you see Victoria's secret thrall.
If it's anything like that fucking grilled octopus, I don't want any part of it.
That's what you say now. Boros is the guild that I've played the most. It just comes to me. I don't know.
And what colors are that?
That's red and white. And it is known for its mechanic of battalion, which, you know, triggers when you have 3 creatures on the field and at least one of them has a battalion mechanic. You get some kind of bonus.
That's when 3 creatures are attacking.
Right.
So you get rewarded for attacking with a lot of creatures.
And a lot of people are like, oh yeah, Boros, you just put your cheap dudes out there. A lot of you've got to have a lot of cheap guys. And turn them sideways, boom, done, Boros. It's not totally true, because you do need...
Such a stereotype.
You guys... You need to craft your battle plan and think of the consequences.
Think about what might happen before you stick all your creatures in there.
So what is an example battalion result?
Oh, like deal one damage to target creature or player, or untap this creature and it gets +1/+1. So like this creature gets first strike.
All right. So they all attack at once and then a good thing goes down.
And you have to sacrifice some guys. You have to send them on suicide missions in Boros.
You don't have to.
No.
But sometimes...
it's sometimes.
Sometimes you're like, well, if I attack with this creature, he's going to die. But something else good will happen. And so, sorry.
Yeah. So it's kind of like...
sorry, Legionnaire.
You feel bad, but not really, because your heart is like a stone.
Those unfeeling Boros.
Yeah. But Boros, I think, is one of the easiest, maybe I'm wrong, one of the easiest hands that you draw that you know if you need a mulligan or not.
Mm. What do you look for? How do you know?
Okay. I know because I want...
You just count the creatures?
I want a 1-2-3.
Yeah.
Turn one card, turn two creature, turn three creature.
Yeah.
Hopefully turn three, my creature is a Sky Knight Legionnaire, which has haste.
Mm.
Surprise battalion.
Damn.
Yeah. So I find that can, you know, you can get that fairly easily if you, not fairly easily, but I think fairly consistently if you build your Boros deck correctly, at least to a pretty good extent.
Yeah. I think it seems like the key to Boros is you want a lot of creatures. Like you probably want 18 creatures if you can do it. You want a lot of cheap creatures. And the cards in your deck that are not creatures should help your creatures attack. And what I mean by that is you want cards that are going to help you get battalion. So like if you have...
Active Treason?
Yeah, so if you have Active Treason, which lets you steal an opponent's creature and attack with it, or a card like Martial Glory, which gives one creature +0/+3, and then different creature +3/+0.
Question, can it be the same creature?
It can be the same creature if you want, but... being able to spread that around can help you do really sketchy attacks. Stuff like that, or the card that gives all your creatures +2/+2. I think what you want to do is you want to get three creatures out there, three or four creatures out there, some with battalion abilities, and then you want to play these other cards that let you get in there with all your guys and just try to get as much damage in there as quickly as possible before they stabilize. At which point, you bring in your finishers. And to beat, here's... Maria doesn't want you to know, but I'll tell you how to beat Boros.
Okay, Ben.
The trick is, anytime ever... First of all, don't try to race them. Unless it seems like they're off to a really slow start. Don't try to do damage to them faster. Just try to get all of their creatures dead. That means anytime you have a chance... to get rid of one of their creatures, even if it kills one of your creatures, do it. Take that deal.
So your removal deck would counter that fairly well.
Yeah, that was the games where I won. I just removed as many creatures as I could and just tried to keep them from ever having, you know, enough creatures to trigger battalion. But even if you have, you know, some sweet two drop and they're attacking, feel free to trade that for their worst card. Because it's going to keep you alive, and that is better than being dead.
Wait, what?
If you take anything away from this podcast, know that winning is the point.
It's the point of life.
Cards of the week.
Week.
My card of the week is Keymaster Rogue, which to me is... pretty much a perfect card. I love this guy.
Okay.
Which makes me think I should draft a Demir deck at some point because I love being unblockable.
So Nels, why don't you read this card?
The Keymaster Rogue is one blue, three colorless creature, human rogue. Keymaster Rogue is unblockable. He's 3/2. When Keymaster Rogue enters the battlefield, return a creature you control to its owner's hand. This one opens the Great Outside Zalzo base. This one is for Ismeri Library. This one is for an invisible door. No, I've said too much.
Really good.
This guy, I feel like this guy is in love with his keys.
Yeah, I don't think he's talking to anybody there.
It was the tone. Yeah, it was the tone of your voice. It's like he's having like a four-way with his keys.
I remember unblockable being a really shitty thing to deal with in the Eldrazi set.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember that because I didn't play that set, but I can imagine.
I loved Azorius Longarms in Return to Ravnica, Soulborn Spirit.
It was unblockable.
Yes. And so this guy being unblockable is great. You do have to return a creature to your hand when you play him.
Is that, Maria, would you find that to be a significant drawback?
No, especially not if I'm playing Simic.
I don't know, Maria. One time I saw you with two of those in your hand, and you looked like you're in pretty rough shape.
Did you?
I did.
When was that?
Maybe it was someone else. I don't know.
Oh, I only have one of these guys right now.
Yeah, but keep in mind, the second one of these you put in your deck, it's a little riskier than the first because now you need other creatures to return to your hand. And yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So just keep that in mind. Use your Keymaster Rogue responsibly.
The reason I picked him is because he was in my Simic deck from the other day, and somebody had put a 1,000 Lashes on one of my guys, which is a card that deals one damage to you each upkeep, and you cannot attack or block.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. It feels
it's
like a lash.
Wound, but
it's
different.
It's similar to Stab Wound, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I played out my Keymaster Rogue and was able to return that creature to my hand and knock off the 1,000 Lashes. It was so good. Do you think this card is worth it, Ben?
Keymaster Rogue? Yeah, definitely. I definitely would put one in a deck. And one of the cool things in the Simic deck is there is the potential for him to evolve things multiple times. And also just the fact that he has three power is enough to evolve things a lot of the times as well. So I think he's pretty good. I would be careful. He's obviously really good with Cypher cards as well, like Hands of Binding. It's pretty sweet. But be cautious, listeners, because if you fly too close to the sun, you will get locked.
Your car will get keyed.
Yeah. Keymastered.
Keymastered.
A wax car. I'm trying to think of it.
Just sit on your pants. Never mind.
I didn't say anything.
And if you ever... Just so you know, we're gonna coin a term here. If you ever cast this guy just to evolve the rest of your creatures and then return him back to your hand, that's called key masturbating, Rogue.
Perfect.
Feel free to use that.
Key masturbating. Ben, what's your card of the week?
My card of the week is Viz Kappa Confessor. And Nels, I'm sorry, it's not a thrall.
Shit.
It costs 3 white black, so it's a 5 mana creature, human cleric. It has extort, and it is a 1/3. When Viz Kappa Confessor enters the battlefield, pay any amount of life. Target opponent reveals that many cards from his or her hand. You choose one of them and exile it.
Ooh.
I wouldn't want to play this card.
Well, fuck you.
Let me explain.
Oh, okay.
You wouldn't want to play against it, or you wouldn't want to cast it?
I have a fear of Orzhov.
Mm.
I think because I grew up in a Boros family.
Yeah. And her dad drowned in a corrupt church.
He choked on gold.
Gold that he owed someone else.
I think just because it's so can be so non-aggressive. And the fact that you have to pay life is something that scares me. But I understand that's something that a lot of new players go through. They're like, oh, I'm scared of paying life for anything, you know, when in the end it's really not that big of a deal, especially because you have extort. So it's just a mindset, I think.
Yeah, I think he's pretty good. I think if you play him, usually when you're playing him on turn 5 or 6, you're going to be able to get one of the cards out of their hand. And usually... I mean, usually at that point, they only have a few cards left anyway, so you're only paying a few life. And most of the time, I was pretty glad that I was paying that life instead of them casting that card. So I think against Boros, he might be too slow. So you might side him out against that deck. But other than that, I enjoyed his presence.
How often do you use Extort?
Me?
Yeah, if this guy's out.
All the time. Yeah. All the time. If this guy's out, yeah, I mean... in my last deck, I had just a ton of extort guys, so I was extorting all over the place.
Ben, we've been meaning to talk to you about your extort problems.
Oh,
okay. We wrote a letter.
I won't read it unless you pay me.
No, we're reading it to you.
Oh.
Your extorting makes Nels and I sad.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I wrote the word sad.
And how does that affect me?
It.
Oh shit! This is
oh point. Fuck! It's all Never we mind. Wrote it all about us. How do you do an intervention?
Does Nels have a card of the week?
Oh yeah, I got a card of the week.
What?
It's the grilled octopus. I like that
Love
card.
Love it.
Here, pass that shit over. I actually do like this card. Kind of cool. Frilled Oculus, one colorless, one blue. Creature, Homunculus. It's 1/3. One colorless, one green. Frilled Oculus gets +2/+2 until end of turn. Activate this ability only once per turn. Granted, I haven't played in a long time, but I like this card because there's a lot of small numbers on it. I mean, it seems like cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good deal. It is a good deal.
It's got something that we like to call threat of activation going on.
Whoa.
That is, when you attack with this creature, like, they can never block it. Because what if you pump it? Then their guy's just going to die. But then you never have to pump it. You can just do one damage and then spend the mana on something else if you want to.
That actually reminds me of playing green decks back in the day because everybody had four giant growths. So you never knew if you're going to get, you know.
The frilled Oculus has a giant growth like living inside him.
Yeah, except a little bit smaller and a little more expensive.
Yeah. It's a shitty giant growth, which is how most giant growths are these days.
I have a giant growth. Do you guys want to take a look at it?
You guys, I like Maria. She makes me laugh.
Thanks, Nils.
Ben's okay too.
Oh, whatever. History shit.
Awesome. Well, if you remember a few episodes ago, Nels gave us a wonderful history shit and talked. Nels took a wonderful history shit over our podcast and told us about The Dark, set from 1994.
And then he teased us.
He said he had a couple of The Dark packs.
I thought I only had one. But
you thought you had one.
I have two.
But we didn't believe you.
No.
Not for a second.
But listener, did you hear this?
That's the sound of 16 cards.
Nels.
Uh-huh. Are you ready?
Are you going to do the honors and open? He's going to open.
Do you guys want to open one?
Nels, you have
to. You open one, and then Maria and I will, like, pull one apart.
I was just looking. Oh, there's flavor text on the back. Should I read that?
Sure. Yes.
It lurks in the fetid swamps and underneath the roots of ancient trees. It hides in goblin caves, maybe sleepy goblin caves, and beneath the Inquisitor's hood, and swims through the empty halls of sunken cities. From the depths of Dominia comes a new addition to Magic the Gathering with more than 100 new cards, 8 cards at a time, for use with your magic deck. And don't be afraid of the darkness, but of what hides in the dark. This would have been the four.
Do you think when you open this that we're going to hear Nirvana play?
These packs are a lovely shade of purple. I just want to point that out. And pink.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so scary.
Very dark. All right, here it is. There we go.
Oh!
It's opening.
Oh!
It's just dust. All right, what do we got here?
Cool.
So I don't know what the rarity is because they don't do that.
So everybody get on the internet if you're not driving and take a look at some of these cards
and
as
if you're
we...
driving, what the fuck? Where do you have to go that's so important?
But if you're listening,
you're
already
stand by.
On the internet.
You could have it on your phone.
Yeah, or maybe you like recorded it onto a cassette tape.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you recorded it onto some hot wax and you made it.
In honor of this being history shit from the mid-90s, then yes, put it on a mini disc,
yeah.
Please.
Mini disc. Love those things. Yeah, there's no rarity on these cards whatsoever.
Just
so.
A little moon.
Just black icons. I'm so confused.
Tangle Kelp. Target creature does not untap during its controller's untap phase. If it attacked during the controller's last turn, target creature becomes tapped when Tangle Kelp is cast.
One blue. It's
confusing.
That's not terrible. Could
I feel
be
like
worse.
That's all right.
Rune Sword. Oh, I remember people had this one. 6 mana artifact. 3 mana and tap it. And you notice the tap symbol. It's the old school tap symbol.
It's a T. Turn sideways.
It's a little sideways T.
I think this is this is the first set where they introduce a symbol. It used to just say tap.
Nice.
Target attacking creature gains +2/+0 until end of turn. Any creature damaged by target creature may not be regenerated this turn. If such a creature is placed in the graveyard this turn, remove it from the game. If target creature leaves play before end of turn, Rune Sword is buried.
That is a lot of text.
That's a lot of shit.
Yeah.
This was like before they had equipment.
Yeah.
Before they had the concept of equipment, they're like, all right.
Bog
I guess we'll
imp.
Do shit like this.
Bog imp. One
this
black,
guy is pretty cool.
One colorless, 1/1 flying. On guard for larger dangers, we underestimated the power and speed of the imp's muck-crusted claws.
Wow, 1/1 flyer for 2 in black.
I just like the picture.
Ah, he one looks, of the only zombies that you could get at this point in the game.
Ooh.
Drowned. It was a blue zombie, which is real handy.
Weird.
Blue, one blue, one colorless, 1/1. One black will regenerate it. Hmm. And yeah, I couldn't really make zombie decks back then. Oh my god!
Oh shit!
We got
shit!
It!
It's here! Oh my god, you guys, you just blew out my ears! I'm the only one in headphones.
Sorry. We got a
what just happened?
A maze of if.
We
appeared,
got the maze of if,
which was a very common card back then. Everybody had it in their deck, but is really the only valuable card in this set. I
yes.
think at this point.
Sweet.
Nice.
It's a land. Tap it. Target attacking creature becomes untapped. This creature neither deals nor receives damage as a result of combat.
Cool.
Nice. No, now that I look at that maze of if, it kind of looks like a testicle.
Yeah,
kind of looks like an intestine. Or the ins. Oh, so
like
there's
a sperm.
Or
like a brain.
Yeah. Or that's the hair. So it's a testicle.
Oh yeah. Like the inside of a ball.
Is anybody still listening? Venom. Oh, I hate this card. 2 green, 1 colorless. Enchant creature. All non-wall creatures target creature blocks or is blocked by are destroyed. At the end of combat, so it makes them poisonous.
Yeah, basically gives them death touch before death touch was a word.
Yeah, there's so
I
many
love death touch.
Thing. Yeah, they condensed all these like death touch now is just what.
Yeah,
this
there's
card
a lot
is.
Of enchantments now where they're like, we'll just make that one word.
Yeah, exactly. Murk Dwellers, 1 black, 3 colorless. Summon Murk Dwellers. When attacking, Murk Dwellers gain +2/+0 if not blocked, and they're 2/2.
I think that art is lovely.
Yeah, Drew Tucker, I remember I really liked his stuff because it was all very like impressionistic. Or
look up Murk Dwellers. That's
a little abstract.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know whether or not to block it because I don't really know what it is.
And I don't know if like I should get turned on because there's a boob in it
there
or if
boobs,
that's
yeah.
just, you know.
I should get turned on. I definitely should. Goblin Hero.
Eventually, I suppose.
Oh, speaking of getting turned on, Goblin Hero, 1 red. 2 colorless, it's a 2/2 creature. Flavor text. They attacked in an orgy of rage and madness, but only one seemed as focused on killing us as on the sheer joy of battle.
This is just a 2/2 goblin.
Just a 2/2
That's
goblin.
That's all it takes to be a hero when you're a goblin.
I have a question.
That's yeah. true.
Would you accept this 2/2 for 3 today with no other ability?
Well, this is actually, that's kind of like, it's called a gray ogre. Any 2/2 for 2 or 2/2 for 3, because there's a card from the original set called Grey Ogre that was just a 2/2 for 3 mana, and that's kind of the baseline. Usually, you don't want that. Like usually in a limited deck now, like in a modern set, that's just below the line of playability. Usually, you want a 2/2 for 2 mana. That's known as a bear.
Right.
Because there is a card from the original set called Grizzly Bears that was a 2/2
yeah,
for 2.
Card, yeah.
But green, see, like green gets cards for cheap or gets creatures for cheaper than red does. So that's why red has to put up with this 3 mana bullshit.
I got it.
All right, should we do the second one too?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Does somebody else want to open this one?
Maria and I are going to each grab one end.
Ready.
You're opening history here, people.
Here we go. Oh, it feels so wrong.
Oh, I remember this one. Fire and Brimstone.
Fire and Brimstone.
A white instant. 2 white, 3 colorless. Fire and Brimstone does 4 damage to target player and 4 damage to you. Can only be used during a turn in which target player has declared an attack.
Huh.
Weird.
Why do you want that?
That was a question asked of a lot of the cards.
Unless they had only 4 life left.
Why does it cost 5 mana?
I think at the time it was white did not deal, didn't have direct damage options.
Right. Yeah, they don't, and like they shouldn't.
Yeah. But this was, a good one. This is their white lightning bolt.
I want to point something out that they changed the white mana symbol.
Oh.
Did they?
It's look like still a sunburst, but now the old one looked like eyes staring at you, and the new one looks like
a snowflake.
Snowflake.
Yeah, there's more points or something. Interesting. I didn't notice that.
Look at those old guys.
Oh my god! All right, everybody, take a break because this is so
holy
much.
Holy crap!
Get comfortable.
A lot of text on this card.
Dance of Many, a 2-blue enchantment. When Dance of Many is brought into play, choose a target summon card in play. Then put a token creature in play and treat it as if you have just brought an exact copy of target summon card into play. If Dance of Many leaves play, remove token creature from game. If token creature leaves play, destroy Dance of Many. If you do not pay 2 blue during your upkeep, Dance of Many is destroyed.
Shit.
I just want to not play anymore after reading that.
More like Dance of Many Words.
Oh my god. So it was like a clone, but you had to pay 2 blue for it, and it was also an enchantment on the side.
It's a clone with an upkeep. And then like, if they had any card that could either kill a creature or an enchantment, then they gotcha.
This was put into decks. People would go totally apeshit for clones and doppelgangers and...
Yeah.
Just mimic decks.
Yeah, and those cards are pretty cool.
Vesuvian doppelgangers, clones, and then this. People would have that. Fissure. 2 red, 3 colorless, instant, target land or creature is buried.
Yeah. And buried means exiled?
Buried means...
It goes to the graveyard and it can't be regenerated.
Yeah, it's destroyed and cannot be regenerated. Yeah. That used to be so common that they're like, we need a whole word for that.
Yep.
So and how is that different than being exiled?
Well, it still goes to the graveyard.
It goes to the graveyard.
Okay.
But you can't regenerate it.
And then
they stopped doing that because they're like, well, regenerate is no good because we made like every card just bury shit all over the place. So.
Terror. Like everybody had terror.
Yeah.
Target creatures.
Now they just have Doomblade instead.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we were actually talking about this before. Do they still have quotes from actual... Because this has a quote from Plato.
No.
Must not all things at the last be swallowed up in death?
Jeez.
Says Plato.
Wow, that guy's Plato. Okay.
It's probably super depressed when you wrote
what
that.
What was the other card we were looking at before? It had Edgar Allan Poe quote on it.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore because the sets now like all have like a world
their
to
own
them.
Mythology to it.
Yeah. And so they... usually don't go around doing shit that just like reminds you that
you're not playing in that world.
That you never got an A in history class.
I always kind of like that about this though, because it you had one foot in reality and then one in this weird.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I think for a while it was like the core sets would have it, but then the other sets wouldn't.
Right.
I don't know if they still do that. I don't think they still do.
Ben, when you just said core sets, I thought you said corset.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Have you never seen a Magic the Gathering corset?
It's on the frilled Oculus. So we never played this way because everybody thought it was kind of douchey to do it. But there was you could sideboard like 15 cards or something. So if you're playing against it's just like this is a dick move to put this in if you're playing somebody who's
even
playing
that's
white.
Not that great because it like how many white cards are they ever going to have in their hand?
3.
Like on turn 3.
Yeah. Again, not so many options back
just
then.
Just play, you know what, for 3 mana, just go ahead and play a creature.
Yeah, play a Hypnotic Spectre.
Any power greater than 0, and that's probably going to do more damage.
It's true. Morale.
Ooh.
2 white, 1 colorless, instant, all attacking creatures gain +1/+1 until end of turn.
Now, this seems to me to be, nowadays, in Gatecrash, there is 1 colorless, 2 white. Am I right? Or is it 2 colorless and 2 white for +2/+2?
I think it's 2 colors and 2 white. But that is a sorcery.
Oh, okay. You're so right. Oh, this is an instant.
This can happen at an opportune time.
Mm-hmm. Surprise. I have good morale today. It's my birthday. I get to attack you for 1 more.
Can that be the card this week? Is it's my birthday?
I think that's a great card. It's
that
my
do?
Birthday. You get to...
Target, it's my birthday. It's my birthday. It's an instant.
Uh-huh.
And it's white. And target player takes back their attack.
Because it's my birthday.
It's my birthday.
It's basically a giant maze of
And then, the flavor text just says, guys.
Just guys. Awesome. Get to it, listeners.
We've got so many good cards we've made.
Carnivorous plant. One green, three colorless. It's a wall.
Summon wall.
A summon wall. Yeah, there used to be, walls. I don't know if there still are walls. But
there are not.
4 or 5. So this was one of the rare walls that had a large amount of attack. Amount of
power. Yeah, so walls all have defender. And oh, so that's right. Now they just put defender on a card and they'll give it a real creature type. Because, like, obviously this thing is not a wall, it's a plant.
Yeah.
But there was, like, a special rule for walls that walls can attack. So now they would just... This probably is actually, like, says creature plant now.
Yeah.
They probably updated it.
Wall of bone. Everybody had a wall. Wall of bone. Yeah.
I'm surrounded by a wall of bone right now, I guess.
My wall of bone appeared when the Feral Docubus came out.
My wall of bone can regenerate for one black mana.
I think we just found it's my birthday. It's festival.
Festival.
It's one white. Listen, opponent may not declare an attack this turn. Play during opponent's upkeep phase.
Wow.
We just found it's my birthday.
That's crazy.
Oh my god.
Wow. The art on this card.
Why did you invite a skeleton?
It's Hamlet's.
It's probably just a guy in a skeleton mask.
Okay.
Holding a skeleton.
I remember us having this card too, because it was a good, like, fog. It was, it was a white fog.
It was like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Meh.
Play, but you had to do it preemptively. You had to do it during the upkeep phase.
It's like, just so you know.
Yeah.
Don't even bother.
And that's it for that pack.
Wow.
Dark.
Thanks, Nels. That was pretty.
Maze. We got the maze of
if. I can't believe it.
How much more could you ask for?
All right. Time for a new segment, everybody. Flavor Text Theater. So, dear listener, as you may know, we're all improv comedians on this show, and we're going to do some improv comedy for you right now. We're going to do a scene, and it's going to be made up on the spot. The catch is that I can say whatever I want in the scene, but Ben and Nels must only read flavor text. They can read part of the flavor text, the whole flavor text, and then I need to justify it in the scene. So I'm the one who gets screwed. You guys are the ones that get to read whatever flavor text you want.
Yeah, so...
We'll see what happens.
Mm.
Are you guys ready?
Ready.
Welcome, gentlemen. I'm glad you've decided to take a look at this apartment here on the upside of town.
Of course.
Thank you. I think it's a lovely choice. We've got 3 bedrooms. You'll notice the fireplace to my left.
In that case, you'll get a nice view.
Yes, you've noticed the bay windows, complete with seat. There's a seat there.
Entrance is free. Donations are required.
Oh, well, rent is not free. It's $1,000 a month. But you can make a donation to charity if you choose.
That cannot be attained by either heredity or money.
Usually money comes along with hereditary. I mean, with... fuck. What's the word I'm looking for?
Legend has it that if the woman is pure of heart and her love is true, a Mesa Pegasus will appear.
Ah, the hard part isn't landing in the saddle. The hard part is leaping before you see it.
Right. You'll fit right in here. The neighborhood is super weird.
This noise is so loud, it echoes through the trees.
That is actually old Mrs. McGinty. She likes to bang pans together every morning at 8 a.m. after making bacon. You'll grow to love it.
Truly absurd. Molasses comes to mind.
No, sure, sometimes she cooks with molasses. That's true.
It's amazing this species can survive at all given such protracted periods of mate selection.
Yeah.
Yes, Boros tactics are unparalleled.
Usually it's better to make a wall out of the wood.
Tell me about it. I'm having a hard time finding a guy. Right? You guys have each other, so I mean...
Perhaps the creature enjoys the gentle rocking motion.
Look, I don't need sex tips from you,
His
buddy.
His blow never landed.
Have you been watching? Have you put a camera in my bedroom?
Then one day I turned my back on a drunken soldier.
Oh. Does your boyfriend know about that?
Ultimately.
But when your comrades are dying around you, inner strength must carry the day.
The contract specified an appendage for a missed payment.
That's right. If you miss a payment, you owe me any appendage you can choose. I prefer genitals, but that's just me. It can be an arm, Yeah, if you're right-handed, can be your left arm.
His widow didn't take much solace in that accomplishment.
In you?
Everyone roots for the little guy, but no one bets on him.
You look just fine to me. You look like an average-sized man.
Tree symbol.
Now I'm going to take you into the master bedroom.
Ah, enter. And leave the shackles of society behind.
Oh, you don't want these. We put handcuffs in all of the bedrooms just kind of to give you an idea of what it might be like once you move in.
We measure our progress in heartbeats.
Oh, I understand it's more of a love thing. You don't do the beatdowns.
Needs more toad.
Great moments in addiction. It's just a...
God.
That was not the sound of Ben having an orgasm, but rather the sound of him shooting up some sweet, sweet heroin.
Very different sounds.
My great moment in addiction is, I don't know if you guys know, I have a cat named Moxon.
Mm.
And that's a Welsh word, Welsh name.
And this was named before, independently of your magic addiction.
Yes, but well before my magic addiction. And I would casually call him Mox when referring to him. And only recently, in the past few days, I would say Mox, and I was like, wait a second. And then I thought of the old magic card. Wow. And I was like, that's pretty cool.
What color Mox?
Yeah.
He'd be white.
Mox Pearl.
Yeah.
There's a couple, there's other ones now past that, right?
Oh, there's like a weird Mox, like Diamond. Chrome Mox and Mox Diamond and other ones that are not like real Moxes.
I remember in the Artifact centered set that came right after Eldrazi, there was a new Mox. There was like...
Yeah, I think that was the Chrome Mox.
But
you had to like...
Discard a land or something.
Or I think that one like only did anything if you had...
Oh, it had...
Artifacts out?
Yeah, it was a word
Metalcraft
for it.
Card.
Metalcraft, yeah.
Yeah.
So it wasn't any good unless it was turn two or three.
Does your cat work if they're only when there's artifacts in play?
Yeah, that's when he's most working.
Moxon is what we use for the plural of Mox.
Yeah.
I always hated it. I hated the way it
really?
Sounded. I would say Moxes. But
you really that you would say Moxon?
People would say Moxon.
Oh, yeah.
No way.
True.
Yeah, I had many Moxon.
True. I told you this.
I don't listen to you. Thanks for listening, everybody, to episode 8 of Magic the Amateuring.
Yeah.
We'd love it if you would follow us on Twitter at MTAcast or send us an email at magictheamateuring@gmail.com.
Mm.
Or leave us a review on iTunes if that's possible.
Yes, it is.
Does anybody do that?
We don't have any reviews on iTunes. No. Make it a good one.
Yeah.
Please. If you do and leave your email, I'll send you a smiley face picture email. It'll be worth it.
All right, I'm going to take this frilled Oculus into the closet, if you guys don't mind.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Sure, yeah.
I'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye, Nels.
Bye, Nels.
Bye, listener.
Goodbye.
Bye, Ben.
That wasn't the frilled Oculus.
No, Nels. I didn't agree to this. Sorry.
1 minute in heaven. Didn't work out.
Oh God. So I'm Mr. Million.